Hello and welcome to Blind Line, ACB Radio Mainstream's weekly interactive talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. It's certainly starting to seem like autumn where I am, so I guess that means that our summer over here is just about over, and in the Northern Hemisphere, spring is beginning, and I guess that's exemplified by the fact that daylight saving time has now started in the United States, or most of it. I think there are still bits of it that aren't observing it, and that means that we now are on an hour later, because we continue to observe universal time, so everything moves around in relation to it. Well, we are going to have an open forum part of the program a little bit later, but what we're going to be doing first is taking a look ahead to this weekend, when ACB Radio Mainstream is very pleased to be broadcasting the convention of the California Council of the Blind, and that will begin on Friday at, I believe, 1 Pacific time. And to talk to us a little bit about what we can expect there and some of the things that are happening with CCB, we're joined by its president, Jeff Tom. And Jeff, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've recently succeeded Kathy Scivers, and my goodness, what an amazing contribution she's made, and what a hard act to follow it must be for you.
Well, it is going to be a hard act, but the good thing about it is that she has done so much for this organization and left us with such a positive state of affairs that it is pretty easy for someone to step in and take over when we have so many outstanding members and outstanding leaders that she's developed over the past few years.
Could we talk a little bit about the history of the CCB, because it has quite a long and proud history that actually predates ACB, doesn't it?
Yes, we started in 1934, obviously long before I was around. In fact, there are only maybe a couple of people alive that remember that. It was an affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind at one time, and in fact, we ultimately merged with the California Council of the Blind in the early 1980s.
That's a very proud and amazing history. And I'm right in saying that, of course, Jacobus Ten Broek himself was a member of CCB, was he not?
Jacobus Ten Broek was indeed, as was Dr. Newell Perry. They were a couple of the founding members of the National Federation of the Blind, and they were obviously some of our founding members as well.
And does that create any kind of conflict these days, given the split that occurred in 1961, because I know that CCB is still pretty proud of many of the contributions that they both made?
No, I don't think it creates any kind of a conflict. I think that what it does is give us a sense of philosophy and of history, and one that makes us believe and realize how very important we are and how much we have to add to the blind and visually impaired population of this country.
You've done some pretty innovative things over the years, and I know that in the past on Blindline we've spoken with Dan Kaiser, who of course I think he's still doing government relations for CCB, is he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Governmental Affairs Director.
Right, and he's also done things like GBX and the old bulletin board days and things. So how many staff does CCB actually have on board?
We have essentially three staff members. We have two staff members full-time at our main office in the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as Dan Kaiser, who works in Sacramento, which is the state capital of California.
So over the weekend, when you all come together and discuss the issues that are important to you, what are some of the issues that are uppermost in people's minds right now as they prepare to come together?
Well, there's a number of issues. I think perhaps the issue during this year for us is the education of blind and visually impaired children throughout this country, and especially in California. We have a major bill, Assembly Bill 662, which attempts to deal with a number of the problems which we face in California and really throughout the country. This is obviously not only an important matter to those of us in California, but it is also very important to ACB as well, which is trying to do what it can to ensure that the reauthorization of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act contains amendments that will further the education of blind and visually impaired children throughout the country.
I'm glad you raised this, because we've had calls to this program about the state of blindness education, not just for children but for adults going through colleges and universities in California, and it seems like disabilities, people with disabilities in particular, have really felt a big blow in terms of budget cuts in California in recent years.
Well, we certainly have, and I think if there's one problem that is perhaps foremost among those we need to cure, because it really impacts everything else, is the need for more teachers and more teacher training programs. The funding levels have deteriorated over the years, and the numbers of teachers for the visually impaired is at a crisis low point. And if we don't turn that around, we're not going to have any qualified teachers left in another 20 years.
So what means are you using to try and seek to turn that around?
Well, a coalition of groups, including the American Council of the Blind, is attempting to increase teacher training funding by 300% to approximately $7 million, and hopefully the United States Congress will agree to that increase. We have to do something, and we have to do it now.
Obviously, there are national implications of this issue, but to what extent have the budget cuts in California that I understand were initiated by California's governor had a particular impact on California in particular?
Well, the budget cuts, the good news is that most of those budget cuts have not yet been enacted, but the bad news is that they're coming, and probably within the next few months. It only remains to be seen whether through the activities of the California Council of the Blind and other advocacy organizations we can limit or moderate those budget cuts. The governor is seeking to slash severely our medical assistance services, to cut our supplemental security income benefits, which are the mainstay for many low-income blind and visually impaired persons in California, and really to cut a number of other areas as well that can impact us. And it's going to take a strong lobbying effort by all blind and visually impaired Californians and those with disabilities in general to forestall these budget cuts from being implemented.
So what's the program looking like over the weekend? Are there some interesting speakers lined up?
Oh, we have some outstanding speakers, I think. I'm very excited. Friday afternoon, which will be the first general session of our convention, and obviously the first time, as far as I know, that a state affiliate is going to be broadcasting over ACB Radio.
That's right. Yes, it is.
We will have the state librarian for services to the blind and visually impaired, who will be providing us with updated information on what's going on with those services. And then we're going to follow with what I think will be one of the most interesting panels. It's going to be on individuals that have traveled to various foreign countries. We're going to have Mitch Pomerantz, who's an ACB board member and my first vice president and a past president of CCB, and his wife Donna Pomerantz are going to talk about their trip to South Africa. We're going to have Margie Donovan, who is very active in the American Council of the Blind, talk about her trip to Peru. And I don't mean Lima, I mean walking around in the jungles or wherever she went. And we're going to have a current student, Lisa Maria Martinez from UC Berkeley, talking about her semester at sea. And she's labeled her talk, and I'm fascinated to hear about this, 14 countries in 15 minutes.
Well, beat that.
Yes.
Sounds fascinating. Can you tell us a bit more about what's happening later on in the convention?
Well, that evening we're very excited to have a member of the ACB Board of Directors from Colorado, Alan Beatty, come to talk to us about developing tomorrow's leaders. He himself is an outstanding mentor and wants to spread the word that we need more of that, and I'm really excited to hear what he has to say on that point. We're also going to have, and I think we need to hear more about these programs, and fortunately enough, it's one of our own members. A gentleman by the name of Alan Brenner has made a huge success out of a Center for the Blind in an area which is partly suburban and partly rural, and it is very difficult to create a center with the money that it takes, with the manpower, personnel power, I should say, that it takes. And he has done a miraculous job, and I'm hoping that others can find out a potential blueprint for how to make it work, because he is just a real inspiration in that area. We are, of course, on Saturday, going to have the director of our Department of Rehabilitation and some of her officials, including the new program manager of services to the blind. This is in light of the fact that we were thrilled to have worked with a coalition of groups last year to have enacted our SB 105, which is going to establish this new division within the department that will have all blind services within it. We won't have to worry about having our services spread out over the whole Department of Rehabilitation anymore, and on July 1, this division will come into being. So we're going to get an update on how that process is shaping up, and we are really excited about it.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you about that. That's a very significant achievement, particularly when you look at the number of states who are having their separate agencies for the blind or commissions for the blind threatened around the U.S. What's the secret to that? How did you manage to back the trend?
Well, I think it was primarily due to the great leadership of a number of people, and especially Kathy Skivers and Jim Willows, who's the past president of the National Federation of the Blind of California. It took a willingness of not only for our two organizations to work together, but also most of the major provider organizations throughout the state to work together and to form a coalition that could not be stopped. We knew that our cause was just. We just had to have enough clout behind it to convince the legislature that it was just, and we were able to do that through unity. And I think if other states can reach some common ground on a number of issues, and that isn't always easy, but if they can reach that common ground, their chances are certainly going to be multiplied.
How does that affect your relationships with other disability organizations who may see the blind as being a bit elitist, wanting separate services?
Well, we had to do some convincing. There was some disagreement by some segments of the disability community, but we tried to tell them, you know, we're not out to have your services reduced. We're not out to take your money. We just want to make sure that our services meet the demands that we need. And, in fact, we told them, look, we are more than willing to help you in any way we can to make sure that everybody gets quality services. In fact, one of the things that was added to the bill, in this case at the request of the Department of Rehabilitation, even before they were willing to necessarily not oppose our bill, was a provision that applied to all disability groups in order to make technology, to require state agencies to make technology accessible. So this was something that all disability groups could applaud, and it helped to lessen the degree of insecurity about supporting our bill.
When you look at anecdotal evidence, it would certainly suggest that, particularly in the vocational area, in placement services that are generic for the disabled, blind people don't tend to do very well because we're more difficult to place. A lot of blind people will go for more academic jobs or higher paid jobs, more skilled jobs, and it's harder to get blind people into work than it is, say, to get somebody who may have an intellectual disability into, say, pushing carts at a supermarket or whatever. Have you been able to confirm that more than just anecdotally? Is there research that indicates that those generic placement agencies don't generally work for us?
Well, there are certainly studies that do provide some indication that agencies that serve the blind and vision impaired specifically have better outcomes. Now, obviously, this isn't going to be universally true because it is going to depend on the personnel in each agency from top to bottom. Excuse me. But I think that the studies that do exist, and there really aren't enough of them, But the studies that do exist do show direct correlation and causal relationship, I should say, between the use of a generic agencies and the greater degree of positive outcome for blind and vision impaired clients. I'm sorry, the use of specific agencies, not generic agencies.
Right, absolutely. All right, and I take it that there will be a banquet as part of the convention?
There will. There always is. And in this time, I have decided, since the first convention that I am going to be fortunate enough to preside over, that we're going to keep it on the light side. We're going to have a quite famous, at the local Sacramento area anyway, blind entertainer who is an outstanding keyboard player and vocalist, and so he is going to be playing for us, singing for us, probably doing a few jokes, because he always does, and we'll give some awards out, and we'll do some other fun things, and I think, I suspect, although he doesn't know it yet, but I suspect we're also going to demand that Alan Beatty get out his guitar and do a couple tunes for us.
Ah, yes, I'm very pleased you mentioned that, because I meant to ask about that when you mentioned his name before. Get him to do the Mississippi School Revival or something.
We'll have to do that.
Oh, man, right. That's such a great song, especially when he does it. I should say, if you'd like to have a chat to Jeff about CCB and the convention or anything in general, you're welcome to give us a call. The number here is area code 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked for a conference code by Spiderphone, you should enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512, and the lines are open now. Do you have a national office presence at the convention this weekend?
Well, Alan Beatty is going to be our national representative. But
okay.
Of course, we always have one, because we not only have Ms. Pomerantz, who's a board member, but we have, as our own CCB secretary, Artis Bazin, who's the treasurer of ACB. So California always has somebody around, and we probably would have the president himself if he didn't have another state to go to. So, you know, we do pretty well out here.
Well, life's never dull for the national president, I'm sure.
No.
Always happening. So how many people will you be expecting to attend the convention?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that, because I don't know exactly how many we're going to have yet, but pre-registration is way above normal. As of Wednesday, we were over 180, and I believe for a Northern California convention, which is a little smaller than those that we have in L.A. usually, pre-registration is somewhere around 150 to 160 normally, so I'm thinking that we could very well approach 250 to 300, and I will be extremely pleased if that indeed is the outcome.
I've been to a few national conventions now, but not any state ones, so I take it that you would also have, do you have a resolutions committee and pass resolutions and things?
You know, we do, and I have to say that one of the advantages of being president is that I'm able to step down and step away from the resolution.
Yeah.
That is an incredibly hard job. And we will certainly have resolutions on a number of subjects. We pride ourselves in California. One of the practices that that I always used is, even when somebody had an idea for a resolution that I totally opposed, I was always willing to help them draft the resolution, to present it to the committee, and to bring it to the floor. The spirit being that open debate was absolutely necessary in this organization, and I might tell them ahead of time, and I probably would if I didn't agree with it, that I would be opposing it, but at least they would get their fair chance to convince the membership of the correctness of their particular idea.
Yes, and that's a very difficult skill, really, and it's the same as debating, you know, and I think people who were in school debating teams or university debating teams and somehow had to tackle a moot with which they didn't necessarily agree, that's very good training for being on the resolutions committee.
Well, it certainly is, and I must say that we have a very able chairperson, Peggy Martinez, and I am blessed to have a number of outstanding members. The only problem I have with the California Resolutions Committee now is because I serve on the National Committee, California is always sending more resolutions than any other state. And as far as I'm concerned, if they just knock off some of these resolutions, they'd have a lot less work come the convention in Pittsburgh.
Weren't you chairing the committee last year?
Yes, I'll probably be doing it again this year.
Yeah, very good. Oh, well, we'll hear lots of you at the convention once again, at the National Convention. You know, the Resolutions Committee process then, does that mean that this is a means by which resolutions of a national significance that are passed by this convention make it to the National Convention? Is that how the process works?
With respect to our state, we have a number of resolutions that impact only California, and we also have a number of resolutions that we refer on to the National Convention. I think there was one year that California actually had about 8 or 9 resolutions that went on to the National.
As president, you must feel, I suppose, a bit of frustration in the sense that people have these wonderful, laudable ideal about all sorts of issues that are bugging them and resolutions are passed, but often it creates all sorts of issues for the organization in terms of which ones you can actually really pursue.
Can you repeat that question? I was interfered with momentarily.
Yes, I can hear that. I was just going to say that it must be difficult sometimes when a whole lot of laudable resolutions are passed, but you as president must have some role in prioritizing those and working out which ones you can really deal with.
Well, it is, and I think that's also true on the national level. You know, we only have so many resources to get things done, and we only have so much ability to get things done. Just as an example, I can remember that one of the resolutions that we passed at a recent convention had to do with access to airline websites. But, you know, we only had so much control over airline websites, unfortunately. Some of them are somewhat accessible and some of them are not. And I can remember on both the state and national level, we have passed resolutions dealing with the failure of AARP to make their materials accessible. Well, we obviously can't make them do it. We can pressure them and do quite a bit of pressuring, as we've already done, but, you know, you can only do so much. So, yes, unfortunately, we don't have all the resources that we need to accomplish everything, but I think that on both the state and national level, we do as much as we can.
So tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background when you're not being president of ACB? What kind of things are you doing?
Oh, unfortunately,
CCB,
I'm very busy doing a number of other things. I have 3 children, 2 grown children who live in the Los Angeles area, and have a 9-year-old who requires a little bit of time, as 9-year-olds do.
Indeed.
I am an attorney for the California legislature, and I have to supervise a number of other attorneys. I'm in a nonpartisan state agency that works for all 120 legislators, drafting laws and drafting legal opinions. So between the weekends that I work for CCB at home or away, and the weekends that I have to go into work for the legislature, it doesn't leave me too many open weekends. But I do once in a while get away to ski, because I refuse to give that up.
So what motivates you when you obviously have a very busy career and a family? What is it that encourages you to volunteer all this time to CCB at a state level and to ACB at a national level?
Well, you know, I hope it's just got to be more than an ego trip. If your main motivation isn't to make the world a better place than when you came into it, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. And I hope really that that's why I'm doing it. I also think that part of my motivation stems from the fact that I've been pretty lucky. And within the parameters of what most blind people are able to achieve, I've managed to get to have a pretty good standard of living, and I think that that requires me to give something back.
Hmm. And let's talk about the coverage over the weekend. What was it that encouraged you to use ACB Radio? And obviously we're delighted because we hope it will encourage other affiliates around the country to use us in this way. But what was it that made you decide that you'd like the whole convention broadcast on the internet?
Well, you know, I think California always prides itself on trying to do things before just about anybody else. We've always sort of been that way. And I just want people to know what we're doing out here, to look at us, to copy us if we're doing things that you like, to criticize us if you're doing things that we don't, and to try and make us better. And I just think that it can't hurt, and it can only help for people within California and throughout the country and the world to have a look at what the finest organization of blind and visually impaired people in California does.
We're looking forward to it very much, and we've got Paul Merrill on the case there, who seems to have it all in hand, and it's going to be a great weekend, I'm sure.
And it's a good thing Paul does, because I sure don't understand any of what he does.
Well, that's great. Well, so this is all happening, it's Friday through Sunday of this weekend, right?
No, actually, we begin on Thursday. We have two sort of simultaneous events going on at the state capitol. We're having some of our members go over to lobby their state legislators on our bills that we're carrying this year, and at the same time, in conjunction with some other entities, Guide Dog Users of California, which is one of our affiliates, is helping to sponsor a Guide Dog Day at the Capitol, where they're going to be doing a number of things, including honoring a guide dog school representative and trying to educate the public about problems that are faced by guide dogs and their handlers due to loose dogs and uncontrolled animals.
Very worthwhile. Excellent. All right, and the convention itself begins at 1 Pacific on Friday, the full
the
session.
General, the first general session does, but we have actually meetings that begin Thursday afternoon, and then our board meeting will be taking place Thursday evening. For anyone who might be in the Sacramento area, I would just say that we'll have an outstanding exhibit area. We're going to have far more than 20 exhibitors, it looks like, and we encourage anyone to come in, whether they're a blind or visually impaired person or friend or family member. We will. There is a registration fee if you want to attend certain functions, but you can also walk in off the street and for no charge come to any of our sessions and just to our exhibit room and learn what it is to be a part of a consumer organization of blind and visually impaired persons.
And CCB has a website, doesn't it, where people could probably find out more about the venue and how to register and those kind of things?
Yes, absolutely. CCBnet.org is our website, and you can certainly find out information on that. Or you can call our 800 number, which is within California, which is 221-6359.
Excellent.
In addition, I'll give out, for those who are not, I'll give out a non-toll-free number,
mm-hmm.
and that would be 510-537-7877.
Very good. Well, I hope that it goes well for you and your first convention in the chair, and that we'll be able to provide a good level of coverage, I'm sure. And I'll be listening from here. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thank you very much, and I certainly appreciate all that ACB Radio has done and all that they're going to do for us this coming weekend.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you in Pittsburgh as well. If we have anything like the evening I vaguely recall in, where were we last year? In Houston.
Oh, boy. I just remember going to the airport at about 3:15 in the morning or whatever it was.
After no sleep.
Yes.
That was a terrible night. We must not do that again.
Absolutely.
All right, Jeff, thank you and good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye now. There we go, that's Jeff Tom, and he is president of the CCB, and we'll be bringing you coverage of the California Council of the Blind Convention starting at 1 Pacific on Friday, which, I should have had this worked out in advance, must be about 20 Universal time on Friday, roughly. So that's happening this coming weekend. And this is Blind Line on ACB Radio. Nice to have you with us. And if you would like to talk about anything, really, the floor is yours. You can give us a call on this open forum. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. Area code 212-812-2800. And when you ask for a conference code, it's 0480-5512. Thanks to spiderphone.com for that. That's 0480-5512. And we'll be delighted to hear from you. Let's see if we can make this one go. Ah, I knew we were going to do that. Let's just fade that out. You know, I've got a little bug with this particular screen reader. Let's see if we can stop it. Ah, well. Here's a question for you while we try and kill that music bed that wasn't even supposed to be playing. Here's a question for you. There we go. Can I play what I want to play now? We've got to play these messages, you see. There we go.
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
All righty, we got that one in. Now, what is... Here's a question. See if you can answer this one correctly. Let's take a particular point in time. All right, I'll tell you this. See if you can answer this question correctly. At the end of February 2003, what was the most searched for term on the internet, on search engines? Now, next question. At the end of March 2003, what was the most searched for term on the internet? I don't have a prize to give you for answering this, but it's an interesting exercise. It may surprise you. Maybe we'll give away a photograph of a rubber duck or something. So if you'd like to play, there you go. Area code 212-812-2800 and the conference code is 0480-5512. What was the most searched for term on the internet in February, at the end of February 2003? And what was the most searched term on the internet at the end of March 2003? But we can talk about other things as well, as I'm sure we will when we say hello to area code 541.
Well, hello, Jonathan.
How's it going there?
This is Stan.
I know.
Well, you know, by the way, it was very interesting to hear Jeff Tom, because I've attended the California Council of the Blind convention when I lived there. And, boy, those conventions are quite raucous. When you get to those various little resolutions, they could be... It could go quite late into the evening.
Yeah, that's the thing. As the gatherings get smaller like that, it does allow for the debate to be more lively and participative and things. But they're such a go-ahead, forward-looking affiliate. You know, they seem to get so much done.
Oh, it is. And I think it's great for people because you feel, when you go to these conventions, you feel so empowered. Because you... There's such a feeling of being able to make a difference that you kind of just permeates the room, that it's just quite catchy and really good for people to be able to at least attend one and enjoy it, because I thoroughly did. I was the vice president of the then Contra Costa chapter of the CCB. They had a chapter, unfortunately, it folded, but it was just quite fun. And, of course, a couple friends, we all got together and went down to the convention, and it was just a really enjoyable experience.
Have you ever attended a national convention?
No, I haven't. I always felt as though I would do that one of these days, but it just never... The finances and just different other things of working on this or that... This has prevented me from doing it.
I have no idea what it sounds like over the internet in terms of whether we truly can capture the atmosphere, but Sunday night, that opening night at a national convention where everybody's pretty much there.
Yes, it sounds like it.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's such an atmosphere.
You really enjoy listening to that. In fact, I'm going to try to make some time to listen this Friday, because even though I'm no longer a Californian, there's still a lot of... I still keep in touch with what goes on there, and it still occupies a place in my heart, even though I consider myself to be an Oregonian now. It's just still something that I really like to keep in touch with.
Fair enough, too. Well, I'm sure it'll go well. Unfortunately, I've got a meeting all day Saturday my time, so I'm going to miss Saturday's coverage, but we will be archiving it, and so we'll make sure we get the archives up as well.
I have a question for you. Maybe you know the answer to it. It's a technology question. Because I have an opportunity for something, and I'm trying to make sure. Do you know whether one of the Braille display products made by HumanWare was one called the Braille Window? Now, did that become the Braille Star?
No, I think it's a different product.
Because I know that there was one called that, and I know it was made by HumanWare, and I was quite curious to see whether it was just a name change or what the deal is.
Not to my knowledge. I couldn't tell you with an absolute certainty, but maybe somebody listening can tell us. There are quite a few of these Braille displays on the market now, all unfortunately hopelessly out of my price range.
Mine too. The one that's... to me, sounds the most innovative. I mean, and yet I know there's a big catch-up game. But to me, I like, you know, because of the fact that it is Windows-based, is the Braille Note sounds interesting.
Well, yeah, I've got a Braille Note, and I use that as my Braille display. And that's okay. Yeah, I really wish the Braille Note had made a 40-cell version. I think the 32 cells is a bit of a nuisance, but apart from that, it works pretty well as a Braille display.
Well, at any rate, I just figured I would just touch bases because it was just really great listening to Jeff Tom, which from the CCB, because it's really nice to see, and I'm so glad they got a commission structure.
Yeah, it's great. Great going, isn't it? Yeah, he's a good guy. Now, you're going to have a go at this competition.
No.
Where the prize is a big fat nothing.
I know. And I've probably heard it, but it's just not... I would bet the one in March I would think would be Iraq, but that's another story.
No, that's not what it was.
Okay, well, have a great day.
All right, Stan. Okay, bye now. Who will take us on? Who will take on the great ACB Radio Blind Line Challenge for today? And this question, what was the most searched for term on the internet at the end of February of this year? And what was the most searched for term on the internet at the end of March of this year? Take a guess. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked for a conference code, it's 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And just as we are giving away a big fat nothing to anyone who guesses this, we have a big fat no, zero calls on the board right now. So if you'd like to give us a call, because what tends to happen is it gets all very busy later. And last week, even we couldn't fit in the last couple of calls on the show. So do get in now, and we'll get you straight on the internet wireless. You don't have to talk about this if you don't want to. I just think it's a very curious thing about this internet search thing. And in this day of serious news everywhere and carnage and arguments and things, it's nice to have a bit of light relief sometimes. But you're welcome to talk about anything that you would like to. Things in the news at the moment. Well, a very interesting story coming through from ACB, in fact, today that you might like to comment on. And this is to do with accessible money. As many of you may be aware, the American Council of the Blind has filed suit against the US government, saying that they are discriminating against blind people by not making the currency accessible. And news coming through today that a court judge has dismissed the US government's filing for summary judgment and that means that the case is going to proceed. The court has not ruled the whole thing out of hand and not worth bothering with and silly and all those sorts of things, so we are going to get some further progress on this case in the next little while. So you might like to express your views on this. Will you be fighting? Would you march? Would you march in the street for accessible currency? Is this something that's important to you? Area code 323, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Sheila Styron in California.
Hello, Sheila, nice to hear from you.
I am president of Guide Dog Users of California, and I just happened to catch some of Jeff Tom's wonderful presentation about our upcoming CCB convention, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to talk to the listeners out there in ACB Radio Land a little bit more about Guide Dog Day at the Capitol, which is taking place this Thursday.
Please do. We'd love to hear about that.
Well, Jeff sort of hit on some of the highlights, and I thought I would just really like to go into it a little bit more in case there's anybody out there who would like to join us. We will be having an incredible rally on the west steps of the Capitol in Sacramento from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. this Thursday, April 10th. And we will be highlighting 75 years of the accomplishments of guide dog handlers in this country, as well as focusing a spotlight on some of the issues that we still face as guide dog handlers, that being uncontrolled attacks on our guide dogs by people's pets and other dogs who are loose off leash. We will be having a really wonderful presentation by Assemblywoman Fran Pavley, who herself was a guide dog puppy raiser, and will be addressed by guide dog handlers who have been the unfortunate victims of these uncontrolled dog attacks. Plus, we're going to have Sergeant William Herndon, who is the head of the Vicious and Dangerous Dog Division at the San Francisco Police Department, telling us some of the wonderful things that they're doing in that city to combat some of these problems.
So what's the objective here, to encourage the states to make better laws with respect to keeping dogs under control?
Well, I think our purpose is twofold this Thursday. First of all, we just want to celebrate guide dogs, and we want to have as many people out there on the steps of the Capitol as possible. We've invited a lot of press to join us. We've done quite a few press releases with newspapers, and we're contacting local media, television and radio. And if I had thought of it, been together enough, I would love to have ACB Radio streaming the presentations that morning. I don't know that we could arrange that at this late date. But so first we want to just put a public eye on the wonderful accomplishments of guide dogs. And then, yes, we do want to educate the public as to this unfortunate situation that guide dog handlers all too often find themselves in, because people just think, oh, you know, my dog is just saying hi, what is the big deal? And in point of fact, when a guide dog is trying to do its job, as I'm sure you know, and probably most of our listeners out there do, but the general public doesn't, when a guide dog is distracted from doing its work, its handler is not able to safely navigate down the street, down the sidewalk or across the street. So we wanted to highlight both the great things that we've done and the things we still need to accomplish, and that's one of them. And we're hoping that the press turns out in big numbers to help us get our point across. Then we feel that we'll be in a position to maybe next year strengthen some of our existing legislation in the state.
Are there any particular types of dogs that are a greater problem than others?
Well, it's pretty common knowledge. Not every pit bull is a mean dog, but most organizations that train guide dogs and most people who give recommendations for safe pets would not recommend pit bulls and Rottweilers and a few other kinds of dogs in those categories.
Yeah, they're horrible, aren't they?
Some of the little dogs, of course, you know, they really can't hurt you, but they're very annoying and can be very distracting, you know.
Those little yappy things that bite you on the ankles.
Yeah, those little yappy bite you on the ankle dogs.
Well,
cause really quite a bit of trouble.
Yeah, we've got a big debate going on in New Zealand at the moment over these issues, because there are parks in bits of New Zealand where you can take your dog and let them run free to get a bit of exercise. And there was one situation where a little girl was playing in the park with her parents, and this savage dog ripped this poor girl's face into all sorts of tatters, and she's had major surgery and almost lost her sight and all sorts of things. And so now there is tougher dog legislation being passed, and even discussing whether certain dogs should be destroyed and should be banned. So it's a very hot topic here at the moment.
As it should be. I guess in San Francisco, Sergeant Herndon has just managed to get some regulations enacted which allow the police department in that city the option of impounding a dog who interferes with a working dog pending investigation. And it would be a really great thing if more jurisdictions around the country and indeed around the world could get regulations such as that in place in their local jurisdictions.
So is there still a way that people could show their support for this on Thursday or turn up? How does that work?
Well, I've never called Blind Line before. I don't know if I would be happy for people to get in contact with me if they wanted more information about Guide Dog Day, or they can also call the CCB office, which information Jeff Tom gave. They can visit GDUC's website as well, which is gdu-cal.org. That's Guide Dog Users of California. And I would be happy to share contact information if you think that would be appropriate.
If you'd like to, that's fine.
My email address is sharkent@aol.com, and my phone number is 323-822-9872, should anybody want to contact me about participating. And if anybody feels that they have any way of joining with us just in terms of raising awareness of this issue, we're happy to be in contact with you and happy for any support or anything, even if we can just inspire people to maybe try to put together events similar to this in their particular home areas.
Well, I wish you luck, because I must say, as a guide dog handler myself, it's the one thing I really dread is someday when there's some ferocious thing trying to interfere and it all gets out of control. So it's a very worthy thing that you're attempting to do there.
Well, it's just all part of that never-ending battle. I all the time am telling people, they say, you mean you still have trouble with getting into restaurants? You still have trouble with taxi cabs? You mean a little dog, can really interfere with your work? It's just sort of a never-ending battle of letting the public know what it is we still go through as guide dog handlers. So this is just another opportunity for us to try and educate the public. And we appreciate it, Guide Dog Users of California, anybody's input and any publicity we can get, and any time we have an opportunity to help educate the public on these matters.
And just before you go,
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here on Blind Line.
Well, I appreciate you phoning it. Just before you go, dare I ask, is there anything to report on the Stephanie Doman case?
Still silent from the Department of Justice. We have our feelers out officially to try to set up meetings with them in some other arenas, and we hope to get word either via those routes or when they're ready to contact us, I guess they will. But we're not keeping it a secret. There has just been no communication forthcoming from them as yet, but we're very hopeful that any day now we'll be hearing from them.
All right. Well,
I wish I had better news.
Do keep us posted.
Or any news.
Yep, and good luck for the weekend, and do keep us posted on that.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It's
Thanks,
nice talking
Sheila.
With you.
Okay, bye-bye now. This is Blind Line. Let's say hi to area code 602. Hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Yeah, actually, it's evening here. What afternoon? Where you
well,
are?
I don't know.
Ted Chittenden.
No, very good. Are you gonna attempt to have a guess at this mystery?
I know it's not radio.
No, it's not.
If I had to, Iraq.
Yep. No, it's not Iraq for either
not
of them.
Not Iraq.
No.
Oh, well.
No. But it's close. The March one. The one at the end of March is Iraq-related, but it's not probably what most people think it would be. And the one in February, the one in February is pretty easy. I'm surprised nobody's guessed that one.
Well, the only thing I can guess on that might be Valentine.
It's something that could potentially be related to Valentine if it went really well.
Gotcha. Sex?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we've got the February one.
That's funny. I actually have something very serious to talk about, but before I do,
yes.
I do want to say hi to Leslie Toms. I knew her in third grade when she was Leslie McCracken.
Okay.
We were both going to school in Los Angeles. And then the next year, I moved to Phoenix. And I didn't see her again for, 13 years? So, hi, Leslie, if you're out there listening.
That's very nice.
Now, to the serious issue. There has been some activity in webcasting and in trying to reform the webcasting laws in the U.S. Congress has initiated another bill, H.R. 1417. And it's supposed to reform the process used for webcasting. It's in committee now, but it's expected to be out on the floor soon. I am involved with the group that is trying to even get reforms to that bill, and a group that actually they are in the process of negotiating with the recording industry. It's a group of non-commercial stations, and I understand that ACB Radio Interactive is involved with that as well.
Yeah.
And what I would like people to do is to visit the website. It's the Save Our Streams website. And let me give you the address. I might send it to you, Jonathan, but I want to give it out over the air. It's http://www.rice, that's R-I-C-E, .edu, as in education, /CB, as in Council Blind, /SOS, as in the distress signal. And what we're doing is we're trying to put more pressure on Congress, even as negotiations are going, so that we can try and get the best possible deal. As I said, we're trying to reform this new bill that has been introduced. There is a letter on the website, and those of you who know how to do it, you can copy the letter, and then follow the instructions to send it to your congressman. Those of you who don't, or who have very good writing skills themselves, may look at the letter and then write your own letter to your own congressman. This is something we do need to get rolling, so that ACB Interactive can have a better future than it does right now.
Well, I suppose, you know, if worse comes to worse, the royalties for us aren't absolutely totally prohibitive, but I think it's the principle of the thing that while nobody objects to copyright holders being recompensed for their intellectual property, the basis on which a lot of the CARP rulings came down was really extremely flawed. People aren't going to make copies of stuff that come down on a 56K stereo stream, for example. It's ridiculous.
No, your sound quality is not going to be good, especially on Shoutcast.
Right.
You're right. Your sound quality is not going to be good. You know what they base that rate on, don't you? The CARP rates?
Yes. Yeah.
It was based on, for those of you who don't know, it was based on, because part of the current law says that the rates are to be based on a willing buyer / willing seller. That is, a deal that has already been set up between two equal partners that have negotiated a deal.
Mm.
Well, at the time that the first royalty rates came down in 2002, it was based on a deal made between Yahoo, broadcast and the recording industry. But the deal itself was very flawed because Yahoo Broadcast was trying to get everybody else out of the business.
Yes.
And that was why we ended up with the rate structure that we have today.
And I think it simply was an ignorant process, really, because it didn't take into account the whole area of personal streaming. Where,
that's true.
You know, so there's a lot of work to be done there, and I really think it's unfortunate that there wasn't a revenue-based model that was adopted where you could look at a stream's revenue and come up with a payment based on a percentage of revenue, which would have been much fairer.
The reasoning among the Library of Congress, Jonathan, on that, and this is interesting because I did read up on that. The reason they did not choose a revenue-based model was specifically because that would not ensure that the copyright holders would get anything. If the stream wasn't making revenues, then the copyright holders wouldn't get anything. And the Librarian of Congress felt that, and basically the way the law is written was that the copyright holders really should be getting a whole lot out of it. So that was why a revenue based approach was not used. And you're right, it is flawed. And again, I think if people would go to the website, look at the letter. I mean, there are three specific areas that we want to see happen, especially for non-commercial entities like ACB Radio Interactive. Okay, three specific areas concerned. One of them is the payment. One of them is the logging requirements. Okay, concerning what artists and what songs were played, and one of them concerns the statutory rules concerning what can and cannot be played in the USA over streams. And those concerns things such as you cannot play more than three songs by the same artist in a three-hour period. You cannot play more than four songs from a compilation set in a three-hour period. That sort of thing. So these are the kinds of things that we would really, really like to see reformed.
Yeah, it's quite arbitrary, and it's interesting to look at the ways in which attempts are being made to circumvent a lot of this by having systems that see broadcasters controlling, say, by a telnet interface, a box that is situated and streaming outside of the U.S.
Right, because the librarian has ruled that. If the broadcast is based outside of the U.S., then they don't have to pay the streaming fees, and they don't have to follow U.S. streaming laws.
Hmm.
So you're right. So what they're doing is they're trying to set it up to place their servers outside of the U.S. so they don't have to apply the laws.
My understanding, though, is it's not just a case of the server being outside of the U.S., but it actually has to be that the stream originates from outside of the U.S. as well, so that if you're broadcasting in California, say, but you're streaming to Sweden, you would still be required to follow the guidelines.
I haven't heard that, but they are very tough guidelines, and I would not be surprised, even if they were easier than that the recording industry would not try to sue to make sure that the tougher interpretation ruled.
Mm. All fun and games, all good stuff. And so what are the deadlines that people are looking at this stage for these?
We're looking at right now is that the bill is in committee. They're looking at rewording some of it, some of it in our favor, actually. I actually listened to the webcast. The hearings on the bill were webcast last Tuesday, and I actually got to listen to them. And so they're looking. We have not been given a timetable of when the bill will be due out of committee. I will say that the negotiations because there was a reform law that was passed that made all non-commercial streams basically put them in the same category as college radio stations.
Right.
Okay. And that under that law, non-commercial stations don't have to pay anything. The nonprofits don't have to pay anything until May 31st. So basically the negotiation part of it needs to be over with by May 31st if it's to be successful. But as far as the bill goes, we have not been given a date when it's going to be introduced on the floor yet. And as I said, I do know that there are some changes going to be made. And hopefully we can get some much stronger changes than the ones that have been suggested thus far.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, and we'll obviously be monitoring it with considerable interest and hope that some sort of common sense will prevail.
Yes, I agree. And as I said, all of you who are listening to this, just visit the website and send off a letter to your congressman, and hopefully we can try and get all this corrected.
All right, can you just give that website address one more time then?
Absolutely. http://www.rice.edu/cb/sos. There is also a PDF version of the proposed bill on that site. If those of you who have the ability to read that. If you want, Jonathan, I can send you because I can't read PDF. I can send you, email to you the version that was sent to me that's not in PDF, and then you can if people want to see it and they don't have access to reading PDF, then you can email it to them.
Okay. Well, I don't want to be inundated with email, to be honest, but I think most people with new versions of JAWS and WindowWise should have no problem with that PDF because I've taken a look and it seems to read just fine.
Okay.
Excellent.
All righty.
Thank you very much for that.
Today.
Much appreciated.
All righty. You take care.
You too. Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's talk to area code 631. Hello there.
Hello.
Ah, it's Nicholas.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man.
All right. The you know what I say? For personal broadcasting, I think that the whole business where the music industry wants to charge because they're a bunch of greedy folks is I think, hey, we pay for the server, that should be enough, you know?
But if you're using somebody's material, you should have to compensate them in some way for the use of that material.
Well, I guess if you feel that way, fine.
Well, why wouldn't you? Why would you just want to take something without paying for it?
I mean, of course I'd pay for it. I buy the CDs.
Well, that's a very interesting point. I mean, you may not, though. I mean, you may be downloading your MP3 collection from Kazaa.
Well, whatever. You buy the CDs, that's the way you pay for it.
Well, yes, I suppose...
It's not like we're making money off of it.
Well, that's right. The difference is, I suppose, that this is like a performance, and that's what the car people said, that this is actually a public performance of a work, and therefore there should be some kind of payment for that, because essentially what you're doing is when you buy a CD, you're really buying it for your own personal listening, but when you're broadcasting it on the internet, that's not the purpose for which you purchased it. You purchased a license to own the material, if you like.
Well, so basically it's a public performance. So basically, you're going to have to pay in order to show it to your friends or play it at a party. Is that exactly what you're trying to get at?
I don't know what the law says about playing stuff at parties. I suppose the point is, though, that people will listen to you, I suppose, because of the music that you're playing. And if it's music that you're playing that's encouraging people to listen, then it's probably appropriate to compensate in some way the copyright holder for their intellectual property. Now, the other argument, of course, is that if you're not, as you say, if you're not making any money off it, then you should pay based on a revenue formula. In other words, if you're not making any money, you don't pay anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you. I rest my case there.
Very good. Anything else?
Changing the subject. What do you know about these broadband phone companies that are cropping up?
Oh, they look quite interesting, don't they?
Yes, they do. I heard that you actually use one.
No, I don't use one.
We've been looking into getting that, and one of the things that I've got an issue with is, first of all, voice quality. I don't want to deal with all that breakup that I've normally associated with internet telephony.
I've spoken to people who use them, and I haven't heard any difference really. It sounds pretty good.
Ah, but I don't really want to risk that. And also, especially with the one that my cable provider, Optimum Online, my cable modem provider, is giving out. They don't offer directory assistance, which is something we can't really live without.
No, well, you could always go on the web and look up your numbers that way.
Yes, but really, directory assistance is that way. By the way, do you use cable or SDSL?
I just use ADSL.
For running a network, I wouldn't have recommended ADSL, but hey, that's the way you want to go.
It's the only option we have.
Ah, that's interesting. So, really, from the DSL users I know, all you get is 128.
Well, it depends. We can get up to 7 megabits per second up.
Oh, that's SDSL.
No, it's ADSL. But here, I choose, because of the cost, to have it capped at 128. But when I didn't, I was getting about 7 megs up.
So your servers are not in the studios?
Say again?
Your server is not in the studio?
The ACB radio server.
That's in the studios?
No, that's in California.
Oh. That's more like it then. Because I wouldn't run a server off 128 if I were you.
No.
Because, let me tell you, you'd probably get internal server 500 errors left and right. With the cable provider we have, this is very interesting because we can get about 16 megs per second download, and that's T1 caliber. But the issue is uploading, 384 upload. It's a very weird, very lopsided cable provider, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
What'd you say?
That's pretty common.
Yeah, I hear that all cable modem providers are pretty good, but let me tell you, DSL will not match this. This is absolutely excellent. I got to tell you, I love it. And for the price of DSL, you get more. You know?
Well, I suppose it depends on where you live. As I say, we've had, for the last 3 years, we've had DSL that gives you 7 up and down. So, that's
7 up and down?
Yeah.
Whoa. But, hey, that's where, but that's what I've heard SDSL is. 7 up and down.
Well, it's been marketed here as ADSL.
That's odd. But 15 down, 384 up, that's a bit lopsided. But the broadband connection is always a great thing to have because my friend Richie just got Verizon Online ADSL, and he loves it. Likewise, my friend Chris got COVAD ADSL, loves it as well. I think Verizon is a bit slower than that. But my friend tried to run a Shoutcast server on COVAD, had a bit of a problem doing that. Barely could get anyone to tune in, much less broadcast. I can't broadcast to it. Also, routers have always been a big problem for me. Well, except for this one. I mean, most routers I like, except for the one my father chose to buy. But anyway, broadband has always been something that I've liked. Ever since I got it, 3 years ago. I guess I was just counting back the years. But yeah, 3 years, 3 years I've had this, and love it. Ever since. I'm never going back.
Very good.
Hey, I'm going to let you go. Get to other people.
Have a good night.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The American Foundation for the Blind is proud to support ACB Radio. AFB is the publisher of Access World, the only assistive technology magazine for people who are blind or visually impaired. Visit www.afb.org to read a sample issue.
And we're into hour number two of Blind Line. This is Jonathan Mosen. If you'd like to give us a call, it's area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked for a conference code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, it's 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And we'll be glad to hear from you. We've been talking about a range of things today. Of course, counting down to the CCB convention taking place in Sacramento later in the week and we'll mainstream. And the lines are free, by the way. We've got a good listening count, too. So if you're sitting on your laurels, don't know quite what laurels are, but apparently it's what people sit on. And if you'd like to give us a call, you'll get straight through and you can talk on anything that you would like to today. We've been talking a bit about the future of streaming of music in the US and the draconian, ridiculous laws that are going on there with respect to that. And, we haven't quite resolved this poser. We're halfway there. What is the most searched for term on the internet? What was it at the end of February of 2003? And the fact that it was the same term that it was for years and years, and we've already established, thanks to Ted's call, that the answer to that is sex. But now the interesting question is, what was the most searched for term on the internet at the end of March 2003? I think it was about the last 2 weeks of March. Sex has been the term that has been most searched for on the internet for years and years and years. And suddenly something replaced it. Can you guess what that one was? What replaced it? You'd be surprised, I'm sure. Give us a call, area code 212-812-2800 and the conference code of 0480-5512. We'll be pleased to hear from you, especially since the board is free and I don't particularly want to waffle on interminably. Make sure a very boring program that does. In the blindness scene in New Zealand, accessible money. Accessible money. That's one thing I threw into the melting pot that we haven't had any reaction about. News coming through in a bit of a news flash earlier that the request by the US government for summary judgment on the case that the ACB has brought against the US government with respect to accessible currency has been dismissed. So no summary judgment, that means that the case can proceed. And it looks like ACB is going to get its day in court over the question of accessible money. What do you think about this? Is the accessible money issue something worth fighting for, or is this one of those cases where, to sort of coin a phrase from NFB, you have to use your alternative techniques to cope, and that it's an unrealistic expectation? Let's go to this unknown caller. Hello.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to press the buttons to make myself known.
Oh, man, I hate that. But we know you anyway.
I know. I should be shot at sunrise.
We should play Charlene for you.
Well, yeah. But Pam likes the song, as I told you.
Mm. Are you going to guess what the most searched for term was at the end of?
Yes, I know what it is. It's Al Jazeera or whatever the heck that
is. Al Jazeera, isn't that amazing?
It is.
Apparently,
well, not really. When you consider, I mean, when you look at it logically, it's not amazing at all. Because what happened is, we now have. I mean, we understand the U.S. We like things, you know, happening now, and I mean, it's like a television show. People can sit there and watch the war.
Yeah. But Al Jazeera it outstripped sex by 3-1. But 300
much.
Yeah. Yeah. 300% more people were searching for Al Jazeera at the end of March on search engines than they were searching for sex.
Well, I mean, if you really have to go to the internet for sex, that does say a lot about you. That
you'll go blind.
Well, I won't even comment.
You'll go blind, I tell you.
I don't know. It is kind of bizarre, though. But Al Jazeera, yeah, it's the one. That's several of the computer pundit shows have actually publicized that.
And a lot of people are going to be disappointed because their English website keeps being hacked.
Well, yeah, and you know, it was interesting because one of our local computer shows comes out of Phoenix, Arizona, the Kim Komando show, actually had a poll on her show, and she said, you know, it's being hacked, which is not lawful. Do you feel that that is wrong, or do you feel that that's okay because it's, you know, an American and patriotic people doing this? And she was really quite surprised. It seemed like it was about 50-50. There were a number of people who thought that was fine.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
It kind of does me, only in that I think, you know, again, we espouse this aura of doing the right thing, and then you know, when the chips are down, we just don't. I don't know. I guess I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it. El Jazeera, and so.
Yeah, you are right.
We'll be at the exciting and ever eventful California Council of the Blind convention this coming weekend.
Oh, good. Oh, we'll be no doubt we'll be able to hear you putting forth your laissez-faire views on life.
Oh, no, I won't do that because I spend most of my time in the exhibit room.
That's right. I know this from last year. You never go and, you know, do the real work.
Well, sometimes I do. I haven't been in the last few years, though. That is true. There's a reason for I think after my whole experience as a working, I might go back to it at some point, but right now, at this point, I'm just not ready to go into that fray.
I just can't imagine going to one of those conventions and not enjoying every blissful minute of the debate and the cut and thrust of the convention and the speeches and stuff. I wouldn't want to miss a minute, even if I didn't have to be there to webcast it all.
Well, I like to go to some of them, but I have to admit there's a lot of snore time lately.
Oh. Well, what would you like to see differently then, you know?
This convention ought to be quite good because we with the help of other groups of the line, including NFB, I might add, we actually got the SB 105 passed, so theoretically when the budget comes up, we will get a commission for the blind going in this state, more or less. And I think that'll engender a lot of discussion. I also noticed, by the way, I don't know if I caught on the national news notes that summary judgment has been denied, so the currency suit will go on. That's a good thing.
Yeah. The currency suit is happening, and yep. So what do you think about that?
I think it's a long time overdue, and, at some point, if other countries can do it, we can do it. That's the way I feel.
Because the U.S. is one of the few countries that doesn't have accessible currency of some kind.
It really is. It really is. But then again, there's a lot of things we do that other people don't. I don't know.
And Vicky Vicky, of course. I mean, there's a lot of things that the U.S. Does that other countries don't in terms of, you know, accessibility, provision of lots of things in Braille and all sorts of good things. So, you know, it's a swings and roundabouts thing.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's part of me that says, you know, if the biggest thing that we can fight for is descriptive video, we've got it awfully good. And I'm wondering if maybe we don't celebrate that more, if we shouldn't celebrate that more than we sometimes do.
Well, but descriptive video, of course, is only one of many advocacy issues that are being progressed right now.
I realize that, and I'm not saying but what I'm suggesting is if we're down to that level, then we really, maybe we've achieved a little more of a level of integration than we think if we sit down and really think about it. And I certainly don't. I'm as guilty of that as anybody else. I can whine with the best of them, trust me. But I don't know. I'm wondering whether we, you know, how we do have it fairly good in some ways. That's true. Not all, but in some ways we have it fairly good over here.
And it is nice sometimes to just celebrate that. That doesn't mean that somehow you should take your foot off the pedal, but it is nice to look at how far you've come. You know,
take our foot off the pedal.
I've had the dubious distinction for the last year of being chairman of the blindness agency in this country, and we had a meeting about a week and a bit ago with all of the consumer organizations, the major one and all the other sort of special interest ones that deal with particular special interest concerns. And in all my years of being involved with the consumer movement, I have never seen such a glowing outpouring of positivity from consumers towards the agency. And it was great, and I thought, man,
well, that's good. That's good because obviously, we all do some, good, we all do some not so good. I'm afraid, I don't know. It just goes with the territory. But anyway, we'll certainly, if there's interest, if there are things that must, that'll be debated. I would like to see. You're right. I'd love to see a more laissez-faire approach. I don't think it's going to happen. It would. It's one of those things that, you know, it would be nice if I could drive too. That's not going to happen. I know in my heart that we need, you know, more government involvement in things than I would like to see. But you know, my head says, my emotion says we really need to step away from it. But I know, and I should. I'm putting that versa vice. In my head, I know that that can't be. In my heart, I'd like to see us move away from that, but I know we can't.
Now, you would have opposed the Clinton health care plan back in 1993, I take it.
The problem I have...
I just wanted a yes.
Well, I would say a qualified yes.
Okay, because I heard a great story I wanted to run by you, you see.
Okay.
An American friend of mine who was looking to have some surgery done, but they said that they weren't sick enough. This is like surgery to deal with weight control and things. And they said, right. Well, if you have a heart attack, you can come back and the insurance company will pay for it. But, even though it's clear that with that kind of weight you are inevitably going to have one, because you haven't had one and because you're, apart from your weight, you're perfectly healthy, you can't have the surgery.
Well,
amazing,
I think that probably, though, and this is where I would have a problem. I think with our HMOs that we have now, I think we have the worst of the worst. We basically have socialized medicine that we pay for. It's what we have with the health maintenance organizations, in my view. But I think a friend of mine was talking about this the other day, and he didn't realize it, but he argued against his own premise right there. He said, well, we really need socialized medicine, and of course there's a few people that just aren't going to get what they need, but that's too bad. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's not, if there's that limited a quantity, then I don't know. I'm not sure that. And he's talking about how we really ought to have the assisted suicide they do in the Netherlands, and I'm not sure that's such a good thing.
We are having this debate right now in New Zealand. Actually, there's a bill before our parliament called the Death with Dignity Bill. And the proposal is that, where there are very...
You know what, Jonathan? People have been doing that for years. They've been doing it, but it's okay because nobody knows about it. If you make it public, and if everybody says, gee, it's okay to kill Aunt Martha, I'm real scared of that. I'm real scared of that.
Don't you think that if Aunt Martha has quite clearly a terminal illness... that she has the right, don't we all have the right to determine if we're rational human beings when we will end our life?
And you know what? It's not sanctioned, but we also have the ability. People do it, Jonathan. But if we make it public policy, and we say it's okay to do that. What's the next step? I'm just afraid we don't want to get into another Hitler type thing where, you know, where so, and I've heard some Europeans say, you know, try to judge other people's quality of life, and I think if we leave things the way they are, I think we all know in our hearts there are people who do this sort of thing.
Yes.
And I would not deny them the right to do it, but I would never put it into public policy.
We have a case before our courts at the moment, and I suppose I can talk about it. We have quite strict rules about talking about cases before the court, but since this is an international program, I guess it doesn't matter. And this is to do with a woman who, in fact, is from my hometown here, Whanganui. All happened in Whanganui. And she was a nurse, and she has admitted to killing her mother, who was terminally ill and unable to end her own life. And she was quite clear she wanted her life to end. She was in considerable pain, no real prospect of recovery. Completely bedridden, and because she was completely bedridden and in all this pain, she didn't have the ability to end her own life, and so repeatedly requested her daughter to end it for her, and she refused repeatedly, and finally it all got too much and she agreed to do it and she did it, and now she's been charged with murder. So it's not that clear cut. You know, you can't just say people are doing it anyway, so don't make it legal, because there are some people who are desperately wanting to end their suffering, but because they're unable to end it for themselves, they run the risk of having close loved ones charged with murder. You know, it's amazing that we treat our dogs more mercifully than we treat human beings in this regard.
That, unfortunately, you know, I really don't know how to respond to that, because I don't trust government authorities that well. I don't trust government authorities to tell us when it's okay and when it's okay. Or maybe even if they do that, then, you know, in 10 years from now, we're going to have some government bureaucrat deciding when, either deciding when a person's quality of life ends. That's what scares me. It's not what happens today. It's what happens tomorrow, or what happens 5 years from now.
But you're in favor of the...
I don't know the answer to that. I wish I had the wisdom of Solomon. I don't.
But you're in favor of the death penalty, right?
I don't know.
Because certainly a lot of the people who are opposed to merciful, carefully supervised euthanasia are extreme right wingers who are in favour of the death penalty. I don't see where the consistency is. I mean,
the problem is that, and again, I don't know, you know, what do we do with people who have killed maybe once, maybe twice, maybe thrice, maybe multiple times? I'm no expert in this, and I don't know what the answer is. Maybe ending their lives is the only way. I don't know. Jonathan, I need to leave.
Yeah, all right.
I've got a barbecue going outside, so.
I appreciate the interesting discussion, as always.
Very good.
Enjoy the convention.
And all the best to the family.
Thank you, sir. Okay, bye now. You can always rely on Dave for an interesting, lively debate. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. What a hairy subject that one is. And it's certainly uppermost in people's minds in my country at the moment, in New Zealand, because, as I say, we do have a Death with Dignity bill that's going to be debated on Wednesday, and it's just being introduced, and so the first step is to see whether there would be enough votes in our parliament for it to go to a select committee. This is where it would be open for public submissions and public hearings, and after that it would come back to the House, and then there would be a vote on whether it would become law or not. It is a interesting topic, obviously a very highly charged topic, and the Member of Parliament, which is I guess equivalent in the US of a congressman, who's introducing this bill, is a man whose first wife died of a pretty horrible terminal illness, and he, I think, is really moving this legislation, promoting this legislation in honour of her, wishing that she could have had a more dignified death. And obviously there are some people who are dreadfully, you know, staunchly opposed to this bill. So the newspapers in this country are full of editorials and things about it, and there aren't that many countries, I don't think, where assisted suicide is legal in any form. I think Dave mentioned the Netherlands. In the Northern Territory of Australia, it was legal for a very short time, and then they had some federal legislation that was passed that specifically made it illegal. So, there you go. That's an interesting one. Well, the border's free once again. The listeners are high today, but the call count is low. How about that? Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. Area code 212-812-2800. And then the conference code is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And when we get on to these ethical issues, there's so much at stake, particularly for blind people of the future with the kind of genetic screening that's around these days. And it is certainly possible, I suppose, in the future and probably happening now, there are certain conditions that can be diagnosed where it's going to be clear that the child in the womb is going to be blind, and people would consider, well, a blind person won't have much of a quality of life. What hope is there? So not proceeding with the pregnancy is okay. These are the issues of our century, I think. All sorts of things that we can determine now at a very early stage and then make quite subjective judgments based on our limited experience about what action to take. So we've canvassed that very delicate issue. We talked about a little about accessible money. I'm interested in this. I'm interested about in how many people are really fired up about the fact that the currency isn't accessible, or I guess conversely, how many people are fired up about the fact that there's being time taken into trying to make it accessible. We have so-called accessible money here, and it's a bit useless. I don't know whether there is specific wording in what ACB is doing to encourage a type of accessibility, or whether they just want accessible options explored. Here we have notes of different sizes, which is all well and good, but they're not really differently sized enough so that you could independently pick up one note in isolation and say, aha, I know what note this is. You really still have to have gauges that can measure the different sizes and tell you which note is which. And so generally, if you're lucky enough to have money, I mean, you know, my wife generally doesn't let me out with too much of it, but I don't think she listens to Blindline. If you are fortunate to have a few notes in your wallet, generally you would be more difficult now since we've moved to plastic currency. Yeah, we got plastic money. So our currency is not a model I would encourage the US to follow. Now, I believe that in Canada, they were exploring. I don't know whether this ever happened. Perhaps if one of our friends in Canada is listening, or if you've been to Canada, you can tell me. Certainly when I was over there about 5 years ago, they were exploring a system of tactile markings on the notes. I always thought it would be a fantastic way to promote Braille if you could put good old genuine Braille on the currency. How fantastic. Really promoting the use of Braille in a very wide range of contexts and in a very useful way. But they were looking at these tactile markings. I don't know how that went or whether they were ever implemented, and I'd be quite interested in knowing. So what's your view on accessible currency? Give us a call. The lines are all free. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. I got an email last week from somebody telling me to give the number more often, so I'm trying. And the conference code, courtesy of Spiderphone, when it asks you for that, is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. Do give us a call and have a chat about any subject that you like. If there's something that you'd like to raise that's on your mind that hasn't come up today, that's absolutely fine. We are in open forum mode, and our business is not brisk today. So if you give us a ring, you won't have any long-distance waiting to worry about, because we'll try and get you straight on there pretty quickly. That looks like it's going to happen with the slow rate today. Don't forget that tomorrow on ACB Radio Mainstream, Paul Merrill's along with the radio show for you ham radio fans and people interested in communications type stuff. And then Phil Parr and friends on his fancy new console, along with the Blind Handyman show. Great show. teach all sorts of things you always wanted to know but were too afraid to ask. That is on at 2 UTC, which now with the change of times makes it 10 Eastern and 7 Pacific on ACB Radio Mainstream. So that's the Blind Handyman Show and the radio show coming up tomorrow on ACB Radio Mainstream. Well, I think I'm going to have to play you a piece of music. That's how desperate we're getting. So let me just do that. We'll see what we can find in the music department here. Shall I play you... Oh, here's one for all the vendors out there. This is by a British poet who was really big back in the, I think, late 1970s, early 80s. She's got this amazing accent. And it's Pam Ayres. This is live. And she's doing a poem called I Am a Cunning Vending Machine. Feel free to give us a call while this is on.
I never seem to get on very well with vending machines. I don't. I always put the money in and then nothing comes out. And I'm the person who's left kicking it in the kidneys and punching it up the throat. A very frustrating experience, I always find that. So I wrote this poem in which I assume the identity of a vending machine, and it's called I Am a Cunning Vending Machine. I hope I can remember it, but in case I haven't, I've got it written down so that it will only be a short break while I go and look it up. Oh. I am a cunning vending machine, lurking in your all, so you can't kick me delicate parts. I'm bolted to the wall. Come on, give me your money. Don't let's hang about. I'll do my very best to see you don't get nothing out. I sees you all approaching, the fagless and the dry, all fumbling in your pockets and expectant in the eye. I might be in your place of work or on the high street wall. Trust in me. In theory, I cater for you all. My flickering windows, they provide for every human state. Hunger, night starvation, and remembering birthdays late. Just read the information, pop the money in, that's grand. And I'll see absolutely no grand. I might be at the swimming pool, and you'd come cold and wet, with some money in your hand, some hot soup for to get. And as you stand in wet anticipation of a sup, I will dispense the soup, but I will not dispense the cup. And then it's all out war because you've lost your half a knicker. Mighty kicks and blows with bricks will make me neon flicker. But if you bash me up so I'm removed, me pipes run dry, there's no way you can win. I'll send me brother by and by. Once there was friendly ladies, years and years before, who stood beside the teapot saying, what can I do you for? They'd hand you all your proper change and pour your cup of tea. But they're uneconomic now. Hard luck. You're stuck with me. Thank you.
Pam Ayres. And this, the poem about the cunning vending machine. She's very good, actually. Very good indeed. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. It's the Blind Line Show. And after that wonderful poem, we still don't have any calls on the board. Mwah! Nobody wants to recode 212-812-2800. That's the number. Here we go, 212-812-2800. And then the conference code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, is 0480-5512. It's 0480-5512. Winamp 2.9 came out the other day. Wow, what a great upgrade that is. Has everybody got their Winamp 2.9 by now? Interested to hear what you think of it. fancy new media library, very groovy. And that's the main advantage, as well as some sound improvements, particularly in Vorbis files. So they've made some changes to the algorithms in the equalizer. Nasty, eh? Yeah, the old got to be careful of the old algorithm and the equalizer. So they've made some changes to the sound, and they've also made some really cool features. Only Nullsoft could do this, you know. Only Nullsoft could have released version 3 of Winamp and still be developing Winamp 2. It's nice to know that their acquisition by AOL hasn't turned them completely into an orthodox company. So Winamp 2.9 is out. I hope you're enjoying it, and if you haven't got it yet, you can get it from the ACB radio download page. Let's now talk to area code 361. Hello.
Hey, Jonathan. How's it going?
Yeah, good, man. How's it going?
Oh, just trying to get used to this new time change.
Yeah, ours changed a couple of weeks ago. We went back 1 hour because we've finished summertime.
Well, you know, this one is the one I think that most bothers me. The other one doesn't bother me that much. But this one does. But I guess everybody's been calling, complaining about the time change.
Well, I think we should ban it. I think we should stop fooling with the time.
Well, it wouldn't hurt my feelings a bit. The only thing I like about it is coming home and there's still sunshine, you know? I mean, now I leave home and it's, there's dark, there's no sunshine. When I come home, there's no sunshine.
Yes. Well, we come from a pretty strong farming nation here, and a lot of the farmers complain about the fact that it really upsets the cows, and milking them's a hassle in the morning, all those sorts of things. But, of course, also for young parents, that 1 hour change makes a huge difference in trying to get them to bed when it's still light outside and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, I bet that's true. Well, I guess I was listening. I was busy doing some other things, but I guess you've heard, which I didn't know that much about it, but I guess our commission here in Texas is kind of in danger of going the way of a lot of other states.
Yes, I've not heard a lot about this, except that there was something that Charlie Crawford sent through last week in the news notes to say that the Texas Council of the Blind was working on this one. And, it seems that there have been repeated threats to the future of the commission over the years.
Yeah, it's been something that the folks here in Texas have had to fight off for a long time. I think this is probably a more serious try. And what this does, without going into a lot of things, is it takes some 12 agencies and merges them into 3 agencies.
Right. So are they sort of 3 generic disability agencies?
It looks like that's what they're going to be, but, it's one of those who knows what comes out of the other end of the state legislature, by the time that, things, get through being marked up and all those kinds of things. I mean, who knows what's going to come out of the other end,
It must be a very difficult time for those working for the commission and all of the uncertainty that's surrounding this.
Oh, I can remember, even when I left Texas back in the late 80s, they've been fighting this thing for that long, and the really sad part about it is Texas has probably one of the top agencies for the blind in the nation. I mean, they provide a lot of service.
Yeah, I think that it's really important that there is lots of clear, well-founded research, because I'm sure that it must exist, or if it doesn't exist, that it would easily be done to demonstrate that blind people just lose out when you lose these categorical services, when everything gets generic and pan-disability and all that sort of stuff. We have such specific needs, and the staff who provide us with services cannot do it if they just have generic disability training, and our needs tend to be swallowed up in the mire.
Well, I think that, and I think that which in Louisiana they have that type of organization, and which is everything is under one big giant umbrella. And the way that, you know, I personally look at it is, in education, blindness is what the folks in education call the low incidence disability. And, you know, the great fear on my part is that because we're low incidence disability, that, you know, there's a danger that we might get sort of shoved over in the corner somewhere, you know.
Well, you see, especially when you look at education, our needs are just so special because we are dealing with a whole different form of literacy. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, that very basic fact that if you put a kid, say, in a wheelchair in front of a classroom teacher, of course they have needs, and I don't want to underplay those needs. But the fact is that a blind child put in front of a classroom teacher, that classroom teacher is illiterate in blindness terms if they don't know Braille.
Exactly. I mean, you know, with an orthopedic type person, their needs, whatever they need, can be met physically by, whether it be ramps, whether it be communication boards, you know, things like that. But in the education department, you need someone who knows Braille and who knows the specialized services and things that blind kids need.
Here in New Zealand, I mean, we're confronting the whole crisis facing blindness education here and have been for a while, but it was the tradition for most blind kids to go to the special school for the blind, at least for the first 2 or 3 years of their education, so that they got some grounding in blindness skills, not just literacy and numeracy and things, but also the skills of blindness, like techniques of daily living, learning how to eat properly and do your shoelaces and dress yourself and all of those sorts of things. And then, of course, we had a government in the mid-1980s that said how terrible it was that all of these kids were being sent away to special schools and that they had to attend their local school. And maybe that's true, except that all these people were then shipped off to their local schools without any commensurate increase in resources for the blindness education sector. And so now you have kids growing up who have appalling social skills and who aren't really able to function. And I'm not sure if they are really any better off in the mainstream, because quite often they're accompanied by this sort of companion person, like a teacher aide, who's sort of mollycoddling them and babysitting them anyway. So I don't think they're necessarily really socially integrated anyway.
No, I'm not sure they are either. In fact, you know, I was a teacher of the visually impaired in Louisiana for about 13 years, and I many, many times got asked the question, is it better for my blind child to go to the school for the blind, or is it better for my blind child to be educated in the public school? And the answer I gave was, there are advantages and disadvantages to both. And if you want to educate your child in the public school, then it's going to take work on your part as a parent, because there are, when they go to the residential school, they can be educated pretty much 24 hours a day because they have someone there to teach them when they get up how to make their bed, or teach them when they're in the dining room how to eat properly. So it's going to take work on your part as a parent to learn how to teach those skills. And if you're not willing to put that work in, then you might consider, you know, sending your child to the residential school.
The other thing that's really problematic with that approach too, I think, is that it relies on the parent having a positive image of what blind people can achieve. And if they have never been exposed to a competent blind adult, some parents of blind kids can have a pretty distorted view of what their expectations should be of blind children.
Well, I think it does that. And the other thing that happens in the area of education is, with most teachers of visually impaired, what you have is you have an itinerant situation, such that in Louisiana I handled the entire county school system, which was, 20 schools. Well, if you have, say, let's say five kids who are going to need to learn Braille, that sure doesn't leave you much time if you add in travel time and things that you have to get done to make sure that those kids have the skills that they need without a person in that school district taking it, or school district, not, I mean school, taking it upon themselves to learn Braille, so that when I gave little Johnny 10 pages of Braille to read, or however many pages it was, to make sure that he mastered that stuff before my next visit.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one thing I notice about parents of blind children in the mainstream, at least here, is that so many of them are so tired and battle-weary because they are advocating for the very educational essentials, the very basics that sighted children, you know, get as of right, and that these parents have to fight like heck for.
You know what? We saw that when I was in Louisiana. There was one particular set of parents that came in, and I mean, this lady came in, and she was ready to fight, ready to rock and roll, you know. And we stopped and said, wait, just, you know, you don't have to do that here. Tell us, you know, let's discuss what we need. We're going to do our best to fill your needs. And the lady actually cried.
Yeah, it's so sad. It's, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I really fear for the opportunities that, you know, younger kids now don't seem to have, because, ideology has triumphed over outcomes.
Well, you know, the pendulum swings from one, you know, one side to the other, one extreme to the other, and I think, and hope, because when I was young, I went to a residential school until I was, in about the fifth grade. But I have seen, and I know of people who went completely through the public school system, and they came out fine. They're great Braille readers. They're socially well put together. But, you know, there again, those kids that were educated in the public school, their parents took a very, very large part and were involved in their kids' educations a lot.
What about the opportunities for mixing with blind children for those kids in the mainstream? Because I think sometimes having peers who you can compare, in a way it's a bit of a leveler too, because if you're on your own, people tend to think, aren't you marvellous? You know, you're blind and you're doing all those things. And then when you get together with other blind kids, you realise, well, actually, yeah, it's not such a big deal after all.
One of the things that here has started, and I think it's a great thing, it's a mentoring program where, you know, you have successful blind people who are kind of in a little way paired with other blind, maybe young adults and kids who are just getting started on their lives, and they're kind of given a chance to compare notes, a chance to maybe express a few problems, you know, express questions or anything like that. And I find that to be a really, really valuable program, because to know that these young folks have someone to come to go to, that they know that they can trust and they can express some concern that they might feel a bit embarrassed to talk about in front of everyone else.
Do you happen to know what the ratio is in general? I suppose it will vary from state to state and even region to region, but what the teacher-student ratio is for the itinerant teachers who are providing assistance to blind kids?
Oh, I have no idea, and you're absolutely correct. It varies, and I can tell you that just from my experience, when I was in Louisiana, I've had as many as 20 kids. Well, if you have 20 kids in maybe two schools that had more than one visually impaired student, you're on the road traveling a great deal.
In New Zealand, I'm very ashamed to say, it's something like 1 to 38.
And I just simply don't see how those folks can get around to and service all those kids.
It's a crazy situation. It's totally, in fact, it's a safety and health issue, I think, you know, to expect those teachers, and they're good teachers, but to expect them to have to incur that kind of workload, it's just crazy.
Well, what happens is your car becomes your office. I mean, somebody actually asked me one time, where is your office? And I laughed at him. I said, my office is the trunk of the little red car sitting out in the parking lot.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it all... we just have to keep raising awareness of the issues, I guess. It's a very interesting call, and I appreciate you giving us a ring.
Well, you have a great week, Jonathan. I always enjoy talking to you, and I will go to work this week, and I've been out of the office for the last, essentially, 2 weeks, so I'll go back to my stack of paperwork that's probably up to my neck by now.
Oh, man, I hate that. Well, have a good one, and we'll talk with you again.
You have a great week.
Okay, you too. Bye now. And that's Marvin. Interesting call. Ending Blind Line for this week. Certainly appreciate all of your calls, and don't forget that later in the week, Paul Merrill will be presenting coverage from the California Council of the Blind Convention. Takes place starting at 1 Pacific on Friday, and we'll tell you a bit more about that later in the week. Stay tuned, won't you? And thank you for joining us on Blind Line today. Bye for now.
When Morris Frank was matched with Buddy, the first seeing eye dog, he marveled that a dog and a leather harness could link him to life.
All of a sudden, I was free, and I was able to do all the things I wanted to do.
Visit the Seeing Eye's website, www.seeingeye.org.